I was like, I don't know all the mechanics and the engineering behind it, but I think the Clark Griswold moment, power draw on the CD.
The best. Love that.
Shut it all down.
Right. Yeah.
This is Sprints and Milestones. This is Sprints and Milestones.
Sprints and Milestones is produced by Audience Ops, a content creation business that helps agencies and marketers publish meaningful content.
This episode is sponsored by Resource Guru, the number one rated resource management tool that promises to keep projects on track and restore work-life balance. Visit resourceguruapp.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Sprints and Milestones Season 2, where we're exploring failure through the personal stories of our brave guests. If you've listened to previous episodes this season, you may have sensed a theme, and that's, what is failure actually? Is it personal? Do you need to experience failure in order to succeed? Or maybe, can you avoid failure by learning from someone else? That's definitely our hope.
This episode is an interesting one because we're starting to explore very personal territory. Basically, when you fail yourself because you decide you need to act or be a certain way at work, and that person isn't really you. We're calling it the case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Toxic Masculinity.
Galen Lowe, thank you so much for joining us on Sprints and Milestones. Great to have you here. I've known you for about a year or so through the Digital PM Summit. You ran a great session there, and I know you're over at thedigitalprojectmanager.com, but why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So my name is Galen Lowe. I'm one of the co-founders of a little professional community called The Digital Project Manager. A little bit about me. I've been working in client services and business development roles within digital agencies for, I guess, over a decade. I've worked in like little boutique agencies as well as larger consultancies. And a lot of my experience has revolved around just human-centered digital transformations in government, in healthcare, and in retail. I've also been like an account manager or project manager.
Our guest this week is Galen Lowe, who's a co-founder at thedigitalprojectmanager.com, and he hosts the DPM podcast. Galen brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to his work, and he's got more than 10 years experience shaping and delivering human-centered digital transformation initiatives in government, healthcare, transit, and retail. Something tells me the story he told us was one of the many lessons that set him up to be an expert in his industry.
All right. So yes, you're right. Many stories. I had so many stories. It was such a challenge picking one, to be honest with you. So I came up with a classic horror film, and it features a monster that represents just a sociological pariah. I call it Moon Knight. Oh, wait, no, that's taken. I call it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Toxic Masculinity. So this is a tale. This is not so much a little story as it is a tale. And it's actually the story of my project management career. It begins from when I was a young lad, and it leads up to the first 5 years of my career as a digital project manager. So let me just set the scene here. Anyone who has known me for the better part of my life knows that leadership does not come to me naturally. I even had a friend who, I got my first job as a digital project manager, and my buddy laughed at me. He said, "You leading people?" He's like, "Well, hopefully it'll lead to something else, buddy." Right? It was like a little pat on the back. I was just not that person. I did not exude that confidence. I did not have a gaggle of people following me around at all times. I was just kind of that probably, computer-y nerd that didn't really have the skill to make anything worthwhile, but definitely had the interest to be involved. So I was like, listen, okay, mission accepted. I'm working at an agency. It's a small boutique agency, kind of in a sales and project management role. You know how it goes. It's like, yep. Can you do this thing? And also, while you're at it, could you do this other thing, like lead all the projects? And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely, I can do that. Went home, freaked out, didn't know what to do, overwhelmed. And I was like, okay, well, listen, I know how to tackle this. I am a child of the 80s, not to date myself too heavily, but as a child of the 80s, I was like, I got this. I want to be a strong leader. I want to be well-respected. I want to be that intelligent person. I want to be that strategic person. And I kind of went in with that. I said, listen, I'm going to be a hands-on leader. I'm going to learn as much as I can from the people around me. And I'm going to try and collaborate with my teams as deeply as possible. I want to be in the trenches, and this is going to be great. fast forward a little bit, fast forward a lot, actually, fast forward like 4 years. And I was working at a larger agency, still the same kind of projects, website builds, but this time for bigger clients, this time higher complexity, this time bigger budgets, just lots more at stake, just tougher people in a bigger city. You know, the head offices are here, right? The C-suite is here. The clients that I'm dealing with, they're answering to layers of management that are really, you know, in their face and quite aggressive about their business, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a whole different tone from what I was used to back out west. It was kind of like, hey, whenever that website gets done, it gets done. Just as long as it's, you know, getting done, that's pretty cool. At least that was my experience, or maybe my perception of my experience. And I thought I was a pretty good partner. You know, we collaborated. I was very transparent with people and we just worked it through. You know, sometimes it went a little bit off plan. Sometimes the budget shuffled around and slushed around. We had to have some conversations, but it wasn't like cloak and dagger, you know, like fists up adversarial client vendor relationships. I was like, okay, well, you know what? This is where I need to be, you know, a strong leader. This is where I can't let my team, you know, like slack off or, you know, get away with things. I can't let my client get an inch of footing. You know, this is combat in a way. And again, the child of the 80s, right? I'm like, I know how to do this. I watched G.I. Joe growing up. Like, this is how I'm going to do it. And I thought I was doing great. I thought I was being very assertive. I thought I was being a good leader that made decisions. And one day, not even embarrassingly, not even that long ago. So like we're years into this role and I've been thinking I'm doing a great job. And then one day somebody pulls me aside, someone I trust dearly, who was a peer at my agency. And she pulled me aside and she said, hey, I just wanted to let you know, like, are you aware that you have a nickname actually here? You have a nickname. I was like, I have a nickname. Okay, tell me about it. Like, I hope a strong leader. I generally expect the worst. So it wasn't like, oh, I hope it's a really good nickname. Nobody pulls you aside and says, hey, did you know that you have a nickname, like most respected person in the company? I'm like, okay, yeah. She says, your nickname, one of your nicknames is Dart Galen. I'm like, okay, tell me more. And she proceeded to sort of lay out something that I had not seen in myself and maybe in retrospect should have, but she was like, listen, you're a really nice guy. You're very happy-go-lucky. People like to work with you. And then suddenly sometimes you turn on a dime and you are rude and mean and angry and you set people off and people just kind of like, they back away and they don't want to say anything and you shut people down and it's sudden and it just happens. And then we say, oh, that was Dark Galen. Because Happy Galen is like, la-da-da-da-da, we're doing this project, everything's going great. Something goes a little bit wrong. And apparently, my reaction is just to like, I become a different person. I become Dark Galen. Everyone like, you know, runs for the shelters and it shuts everyone down. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's interesting. So it turns out, instead of being a strong leader, I was kind of just an unpredictable asshole. I was, oh, keep coming back to this notion of like being a child of the 80s. And no, I don't want to blame necessarily like the culture that I grew up in. But, you know, this notion of like command and control management was a thing that I was just exposed to all of my life, you know, and a lot of what I consider my role models, or at least examples, were just, you know, fierce, terse, stubborn, unilateral leaders.
So this command and control, that's, I don't think I've ever heard that term before. And I've had a lot of conversations about leadership. So where does that is we where do you get that description, that kind of label for that type of leader?
You know, actually, it's a good question. It's come up in some conversations in some circles. I don't know if it's an official thing, but really what it refers to is this kind of you reach a point where it's kind of like, or maybe you don't even reach a point. The style is my way or the highway. It's like, I am the leader. I call the shots. I don't even want to hear from you. Like maybe the polar opposite of servant leadership these days in terms of like, no, listen, you are my servant. you do what I say, and here's how it's going to go. And we know today that no one's gonna put up with that. But you know, the examples I had when I was young, that was kind of how I saw things, like on TV or people around me. You know, the loud voice. Be the loud voice, and you're gonna win. That's how it works.
So Brett, like, my mind is blown with Galen's introspective journey here and kind of arriving that, hey, I'm a toxic element at work. Have you ever been dark you? Is there like a dark Brett? And if so, what are your toxic traits?
Yeah, I think there is a dark me for sure. I think for me, my toxic traits when it comes to working and kind of facilitating teams, there's a stress that builds. Sometimes it might be a client stressor. It might be an internal conflict. Like, there are things that affect the way that you show up at work every day. And for me, my toxic trait is, like, I always want everything to go perfectly. Like, I want things to go well. And when I'm in a place where things aren't going the way that I wanted them to go or the way that I planned, I start to unravel a little bit. And for me, that unraveling turns into maybe a little bit of a back channel, right? It turns into going to this person and seeing, like, how do you feel about it? Am I wrong? And then going to the next person and saying, like, hey, what's going on with so-and-so? Did you, right? Like, that is so toxic, because then I start planting seeds of other toxic conversations that are happening. And it's a perception of me trying to stir the pot or like point a finger at someone. And that's not it. I'm trying to get to the bottom of the story or to kind of connect the dots. But then what happens? Like, I've created other issues that are compounding a bigger issue. So to me, I think that's my toxic trait. That, and the other thing that I do is when I start to get frustrated, I start to raise my voice. Like, I speak louder. And that doesn't go over well with people. Obviously, like, it wouldn't go over well with me either. I don't know why I do it. It just like naturally happens.
Is that why you were yelling at me the other day?
Probably. I was probably stressed out about something stupid. How about you?
For me, when I perceive somebody doing a task or fulfilling a role that I feel like I should be doing or I want to be doing. So, you know, as a designer, if I see someone doing something that I want to do, I start to let that affect my emotions, or it has in the past. And then likewise, if I'm doing that work, and there have been times I have been known to kind of ignore feedback I'm getting, because I feel like, hey, this is my creation. I'm bringing me into this work, and good that you have an opinion. I'm not looking for it right now.
Interesting.
So that's it, and it doesn't happen often, but if I think of, a dark me, that would be it, is I just kind of shut down and I don't respond to people. It's like a one part avoidance, I suppose you could call technique. The other is I just want my way. That'd be my dark Greg.
That was like my first intervention. And then there were others.
There were others.
Including the woman who is now my wife, including some of the team members around me, including, just like people who I used to work with in the past. And they're like, yeah, you are kind of like that. But in the meantime, I was like, okay, yeah, but like everyone can, I'm entitled to my emotions. I'm entitled to how I feel. And I felt for a long time, an unreasonably long time, I was like, listen, this is just a double standard. People don't think that I can be loud because, I am not 6 feet tall. I'm not 6 feet tall, by the way. I am, not a whatever Caucasian male here in North America. This is a double standard. Like, other people get to be angry and yell and I don't get to. Like, that's not fair.
Were you in instances where other people were actually showing those kind of behaviors? Like, have you been in situations in work where people are like yelling and kind of misbehaving, I guess?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, interesting. Yes, definitely. Sadly, Sadly, yes. And I mean, you know, not to make any excuses for myself, but it was still the examples. They were still the examples I was seeing at the top layers of certain businesses where it was very much this, what is now maybe a little bit of an outdated, archaic way of leading people. But absolutely, I was definitely not, I don't think I was sort of alone there.
So it sounds like a little bit like maybe you were modeling that behavior, but were you aware of it at the same time? Like, would you see that behavior in someone else and recognize it and think like, oof.
You know what? I think where I landed out is that there are some people who are just that all the time, right? It's not a different persona. That's just who they are. And I think that is different in a way. Is it okay? I don't know. I'm sure it works for certain people and people just accept that. But I think part of it was the extreme and the quickness that I traveled from one extreme to the other as in a leadership role. I went from
almost just like a switch.
It's funny. We all want our way, right? Like basically that we're bringing it back to like the root. Like I said, if something doesn't go my way, then that's when my toxic trait comes out. Same thing for you. So it kind of makes sense. I think related to that though, it's like, there's an expectation around like what that way is or what should happen. And when things go wrong, we express a little emotion, and sometimes expressing emotion is not okay. And I wonder,
are you saying expressing emotions at work is not okay? Are we not entitled to?
Well, that's where I was going.
Are we not allowed to?
No, I think we should be allowed to. I think the best teams I've worked with are safe spaces where we feel like we can express those concerns or emotions or whatever it might be. The best teams I've worked on have been with people I know who care about my well-being. And if I'm feeling like a part of the team or a part of the work or in agreement on a thing, I think regardless, there are going to be times in your career where you're going to show your emotions, whether you want to or not.
When your role is literally to try to make things go the way that you said that they'd go, injected with a little bit of, but you're not a leader anyway. So I had this kind of imposter syndrome. And then there was this, I'm losing control of a thing. And it took a lot for me to be like, listen, I, in a leadership role, as someone who's, you know, really trying to get over this imposter syndrome as a leader, I need to ask for feedback from people I trust and respect at any level. Even from a business mindset, I know a lot of people who would be like, "Ah, oh, that's such, you know, that's such a hippie mindset. Everyone can feel good about their work."
Whatever.
But it's an investment. It's an investment in people, because guess what? Yes, the project starts and finishes, but you're going to work with these people again. The culture, the fabric of the culture is building up, and people are going to be better performers, not just on your project, but like across other projects, across projects that you manage, across projects that you don't manage, across other work that's like more operational in nature. Like, it's an investment that builds people up, that drives outcomes. So, I mean, that's what I'd say to the folks who don't believe in like this sort of level of servant leadership and like empathetic leadership.
As a person who's led a lot of teams, a lot of people, I think, you know, you have to recognize that sometimes people just need that stress relief, or they need, they need to get it out in some way. So I've had people cry on my shoulder. I have people yell in my face, and, you know, it just needs to kind of happen, and then process with that person, you know, what's happening, and you know, how can you make things better? And I share that because, thinking the opposite of that, which would be people who don't speak up, people who don't show emotion, people who aren't themselves, and being true to themselves, that creates problems. Because then, you know, as a leader, you just look at that person and just assume that nothing's wrong.
Right.
Right. And so, and that's to me just as bad as having, you know, not just showing emotion, but even having toxic traits. That's a different kind of toxicity, you know, that we don't talk about a lot, because it doesn't show up a lot. It does in different, very harmful ways. But it's, probably just as important and certainly just as bad.
You need better examples, and you need mentors. And I don't know, sometimes it's one of those things where you don't know what you don't know, right?
So yeah.
If I time machined back as me and was like, hey, I'm not supposed to interact with you because you're my past self, but listen, you should probably get some, like, get a mentor or something, like get an example of something that's good so that you can balance this. And I'd say that to anyone. I'd say, make sure you're getting like the full gamut of role models for yourself, because there isn't just one way to do anything. And even if you're surrounded by that, and even if that's the culture in your organization and you feel like pressured, like that's how you're going to succeed. Like that's a moment to like take a step back and go, don't just do it because, you know, you found yourself in a game and you think those are the rules. Like there are other rules. This is not a game of basketball. This is people collaborating, working together. You can find your own style and that's okay. No one ever really said that to me. It was like, figure it out yourself. Just watch what other people do. And by the way, like leadership is aggression, not like assertiveness, but aggression. And I should have just taken all those things and gone, are you sure? Like, just like being, just challenge that a little bit rather than like being spoon fed what I thought was my reality. I would say, yeah, like there's other people doing things a different way. Like I probably should have been aware enough to know that. But also again, part of my journey was this asking for help thing. So I wasn't the kind of person who would go and seek out a mentor. A, I didn't think I had anything wrong. B, if there's something wrong, I should probably be able to fix it myself. Otherwise, am I a good leader? Right? There's all these like stacks of things that prevented me from actually even starting to grow. Even just comparing notes with other people.
I think it's all about awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking before you speak is something that people say a lot. And it's hard to do that when you're at work and in a situation or a meeting or whatever it might be. But I tend to think about the way things are going to come off. And after I say things, I worry that they came off the wrong way. And I'll even qualify it by saying, I hope that came out right. Or I hope that makes sense, because I have this like constant worry that I am coming off as angry or overly assertive, because it's the nature of the role I've had to take on in many instances in my career. Like when you need that person in the room, I have to show up as that person. I have to do it in a way that's genuine to me. And to be honest with you, I'm a bit of an introvert, so showing up and being assertive is not my favorite thing to do. I feel like I've had to train myself to figure out what my voice is and how I can most genuinely be myself in those situations. And it's not easy.
I might have even taken it as a compliment at that point. I'd be like, oh yeah, that's what I was going for, right? Like this kind of like assertiveness, that's what it means, right? Just like being really mean and rude to people, which is, when I say it out loud now, I'm like, that's silly. But that was kind of the mindset of like, how do you get things to go your way as a leader? Well, you need to shut down anything else that is going not your way. And you know, we hear it all the time, probably even still, right? It's like, oh, you need to be assertive. And it kind of means a different thing to a lot of different people. And some people do mean that, like get it done, fix it, right? Like do whatever it takes to make sure that this doesn't happen.
Being assertive doesn't have to mean being angry.
Right.
Right. You know, and so I think tone has a lot to do with it. And I have seen through you and others that you can be assertive. You can, you know, maintain direction, control the room, but without having to, you know, let it get to you. And also, but I think even in tone, I think you can even be upset or be angry, but as long as you use the right tone, the right words, I think it's possible to be assertive and not get angry.
I agree.
Sometimes the team is like, you know, they'll come up with something different on their own. Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't maybe the plan. I didn't have to like write every step of what to do in a brief. I was like, listen, here's the outcome we want to get to. And they're like, what if we do this? And I was like, that's great. I never would have thought of that. Yeah. And those moments are just like, you're like, okay, yeah, like this isn't about control. I think that's what project managers, get wrong a lot. It's not about control. We say it everywhere. It's in the textbooks, right? Manage and control your project. Right. But it's not. It's about managing the collaboration of people who are quite good at what they do. And so it's not really controlling people. It's controlling the flow of work.
I also think that when you're trying to be assertive and when there's a drawn out pause, right? And but you're making everybody aware that you're thinking, right? You're not out of things to say. You're just trying to think it through. Because typically in those situations where you are trying to be assertive, it also feels like, time is going by too quickly, right? And you don't realize you're probably even speaking a little fast. And taking that pause just adds drama, if not adds to your authority of being assertive, right?
Yeah. Failure comes down to what we make of it, how we handle it, and how we handle emotions surrounding it.
Yep.
When we're trying to make that recovery.
Yep. While being true to ourselves.
Yeah. This has been awesome.
I'm really looking forward to like the rest of the season, the future seasons, because I think people need to hear these. These are things that we don't really talk about. And we need to kind of have a culture of talking about it because, that's how we're learning.
So good to meet you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. This was great. And good luck to you and the rest of the stories. I'm looking forward to it.
Sprints and Milestones is produced by Audience Ops, a content creation business that helps agencies and marketers publish meaningful content.